Picture walking into an architect's office with $40,000 in cash stuffed in your bag, ready to design a $30 million cannabis destination, only to have him refuse your money because it's drug money. This wasn't a scene from a crime thriller. This was Christian Hageseth's reality in 2013, navigating the bizarre twilight zone where marijuana is simultaneously legal and illegal, legitimate and taboo. His journey from real estate millionaire to cannabis pioneer captures something profound about American entrepreneurship. Sometimes the biggest opportunities hide in plain sight, wrapped in stigma and contradiction. When Hageseth's company, Green Man Cannabis, projected growth from $300,000 to $97 million, it wasn't just about profit, it was about witnessing a cultural earthquake. With medical marijuana now legal in over half of U.S. states, we're watching a transformation as significant as the end of prohibition, creating fortunes while dismantling decades of prejudice. The race is on to build the next beloved lifestyle brand, and it smells distinctly of cannabis. Everything changed during a 2009 golf game when Hageseth met Jake, a stocky Latino businessman who casually mentioned he operated in legal medical marijuana. The difference between the dried-out ditchweed Hageseth remembered from his youth and Jake's vibrant, aromatic buds was revelatory, like discovering aged Bordeaux after years of boxed wine. Standing on the 17th hole overlooking Denver, sharing a joint, Hageseth's entrepreneurial mind ignited. The numbers Jake shared were staggering. It cost $500 to $800 to grow a pound of marijuana that sold for $6,400 retail or $4,000 wholesale, profit margins of 800 to 1300%. These weren't black market figures. This was legal Colorado business. Hageseth's first dispensary visit shattered every assumption. The powerful scent hit immediately. Bud tenders presented tall glass jars filled with colorful buds, asking what kind he preferred, a question that stunned him. In the 1980s, you smoked whatever your buddy's friend had. Now there were dozens of exotic strains, OG Kush, Bubba Kush, Cheesequake, Alaskan Thunderfuck. The experience resembled wine tasting, with complex flavor profiles and varying effects. Unlike wine's consistent alcohol content, marijuana potency varied dramatically, from the 3% THC that baked Woodstock to modern strains exceeding 23%. This sevenfold increase resulted from breeders treating cannabis cultivation as art. Hageseth saw an industry desperately needing optimization, run by enthusiasts who were growers first and business people second. Understanding cannabis requires confronting an ugly truth. Marijuana prohibition was built on racism and propaganda, not science. By 1913, southwestern states began banning marijuana, a foreign-sounding term deliberately chosen to portray Mexican laborers as dangerous. In 1930, Harry Anslinger became America's first drug czar, linking marijuana to minorities and violence against white women. The 1937 Marijuana Tax Act effectively banned cannabis despite minimal scientific evidence. The hypocrisy was breathtaking. During World War II, the government produced Hemp for Victory, then later denied the film existed. In 1972, a presidential commission found no justification for harsh marijuana laws. President Nixon ignored these findings and created the DEA anyway. Marijuana arrests skyrocketed from 119,000 annually in 1965 to over 800,000 today. 22 million Americans have been arrested since Nixon's era, with sentences disproportionately harder on minorities. Before cannabis, Hageseth was a self-made millionaire, building a national real estate company approaching a $1 billion public offering. The 2008 housing collapse forced uncomfortable self-reflection. He'd never learned the meaning of enough, always chasing more without satisfaction. This taught him that money was meaningless compared to family, integrity, passion, and purpose. Despite his wife's fears about financial stability, legal marijuana looked like an opportunity aligned with his new values. With $125,000 from his neighbor, Mr. Pink, they became official drug dealers. Desperately needing expertise, Hageseth hired Adam, a calm 31-year-old who'd been growing marijuana for 15 years. Growing indoors proved resource-intensive. Powerful lamps generated heat, requiring air conditioners, creating cascading power consumption. Unlike previous businesses where he could rush, plants kept their own schedule, a humbling lesson. Their first harvest received lukewarm feedback. Buds weren't properly dried or trimmed. Then a roofer accidentally set fire to their building's insulation, destroying their second harvest. Their third harvest yielded only 4 pounds, not enough to pay rent. They were broke. The fundamental problem? Despite marijuana being legal, Adam operated with the paranoid mindset of an illegal basement grower. With $495,000 from Los Angeles investors, Hodgeseth fired Adam and brought in Brandon and Kim, two proven growers who finally generated substantial revenue. Failure doesn't mean doom. It simply means your current approach didn't work. Running a million-dollar company in all cash is challenging but possible and completely absurd. Hegeseth's first bank kicked them out after 18 months. When a third Denver bank announced commercial marijuana checking accounts, they rushed to open one along with seemingly every other grower and dispensary owner. Predictably, someone at headquarters recognized the federal prosecution risk and another rejection letter arrived. They formed a holding company to flow enough cash for taxes and essential bills. For state taxes, they literally walk cash into the Colorado Department of Revenue office. Federal taxes require electronic remittance, demanding creative solutions. They use security firms, cameras, and alarms, but some days require personally ferrying thousands to vendors. Beyond robbery danger, cash is simply inefficient for legitimate businesses of their size. "I am not Tony Montana or Walter White," Hegeseth writes, "yet every day I commit two federal crimes, growing and selling marijuana and laundering money by paying employees and taxes. We are not criminals, but the law forces us to behave like them." Hegeseth discovered a bizarre paranoia surrounding the industry, not from people smoking marijuana, but from those who weren't. He calls this marijuana legalization denial syndrome, MLDS, the inability to accept marijuana's legality at face value. When applying for licenses and permits, they faced quiet resistance from officials gripped by MLDS. "I know it's the law, but I haven't been told how to handle it, and I'm not going out of my way for people like you." For the first time, Hegeseth felt the sting of prejudice. They assumed he was a criminal exploiting a loophole. Officials would claim, "There's no such thing as a business license for medical marijuana," or, "There's no building code for a marijuana grow." Of course not. The law was new. After spending entire careers busting people for marijuana, suspicion was inevitable. Hegeseth could only meet this prejudice with quiet persistence, knowing the evidence would eventually speak louder than stigma. In 2014, Green Man Cannabis won the Cannabis Cup for Ghost Train Haze, their second cup victory in 5 years. CBS This Morning interviewed Hegeseth, with Charlie Rose introducing him as the man who grew the best marijuana in the country. Though they spent $72,000 on the event, the brand recognition was invaluable. Days later, his master grower, Corey, revealed he'd secretly negotiated with competitors offering 40% ownership. Rather than fighting, Hegeseth proposed making Corey a consultant, potentially earning millions by leveraging his expertise across multiple clients. Hegeseth's real estate background gave him advantages over competitors, former illegal growers, or recession refugees who didn't understand business fundamentals. The industry was rapidly consolidating, with licensed retailers declining 40% in Colorado's early years. He aimed to create a company with the brand loyalty of Ben & Jerry's and Starbucks, where customers would seek specific strains like Skunkberry and Ghost Train Haze. Investor meetings required significant education. Rapper Redman wanted to invest and name a strain. Another investor offered $1 million cash via duffel bag for laundering, an offer Hegeseth immediately refused. Even devout Christian investors approached him with biblical concerns, prompting him to cite Genesis 1:29. After months of negotiations, he secured $9 million from institutional investors for the Cannabis Ranch, a 15-acre facility with a 50,000-square-foot basement grow and 100,000-square-foot greenhouse. The Cannabis Ranch's design mirrors America's journey. Guests descend into basement grows, walk through glass hallways, then rise into the greenhouse, symbolizing emergence from Prohibition's darkness. Colorado's 500 dispensaries will likely consolidate to under 300 within 5 years as corporate players replace mom-and-pop operations. By 2020, 10 to 15 states could legalize recreational marijuana after observing positive economic outcomes. Major newspapers like the New York Times now advocate legalization, citing evidence that marijuana's risks pale compared to tobacco and alcohol. Tax revenue and successful rollouts will eventually force federal action. Big Tobacco, Big Agra, and Big Pharma watch closely. Yet marijuana's beauty lies in its simplicity, just the plant, humans, and fire. Big Pharma makes drugs. God created marijuana. Whom do you trust? Marijuana has been my salvation, Hajiseth reflects. His daughters watch their father follow his bliss while building something meaningful. Even his physician father, diagnosed with Parkinson's, has found improvement using cannabidiol. The legal marijuana industry represents America's evolution toward compassion after a century of punishing citizens for using a relatively harmless plant. This green revolution transcends business. It's about freedom, healing, and the courage to admit we were wrong.